Quite how I managed to get through the next 3 hours, I really don't know. I'm proud of myself. I have perfectly normal conversations with Oliver, whilst Mia ignores my questions and answers with her normal monosyllables. I make supper. I call them downstairs when it's ready. "Why is Dad not eating with us?" Mia says as she slumps into her chair. "He's at a meeting." I busy myself with serving the quiche and salad. I have no idea where he is, and I pretend to myself that I don't care. Let her make supper for him. "How did your French oral go?" I ask Mia.
"Assez bon,"
she replies.
"What does that mean?"
Oliver speaks with his mouth full.
"Oliver got an order mark for running through the school corridor," Mia says.
"No, I didn't," Oliver exclaims. "Why are you such a snitch, bitch?"
"Hey, you two," I say, but my tone is lax and does nothing to halt their bickering. We have just finished eating and I am fishing some ice cream out of the freezer when Adam walks in, his shirt sleeves rolled up. To anyone else, it looks just like he's come home after a long day in the office.
"Hello, kids. You've already eaten?"
I hear the surprise in his voice.
"Mum said you had a meeting," Oliver says.
"Did she?"
His voice is flat. He disappears to his study. The kids finish their food and hide themselves away in their rooms. I hope they are completing their homework, but I don't have the energy to double check. I clean the kitchen and go to the living room to watch television. I don't look up when I hear Adam's heavy footsteps.
"I'm meeting with my solicitor tomorrow, and you'll be hearing from him."
Adam stands in the doorway with his hands on his hips.
"Look, Adam," I say, sighing as I switch off the television. "You've lied and cheated on me, but I don't want the kids to be hurt. We need to do this amicably for their sakes."
"And what is your definition of amicable?"
"I want to stay in the house, and you can have the children every other weekend and for a few weeks during the holidays. I want their lives to remain as stable as possible."
"No can do."
"What do you mean, no can do?" I have to bite my lip to stop myself from raising my voice.
"You'll see, Lydia. You'll be hearing from my solicitor."
He turns to leave the room.
"Adam!"
He ignores me. I get up and follow him through the kitchen into the utility room.
"Adam, we need to finish the conversation."
"Oh, no, we don't, Lydia. I'm going swimming now."
He takes his tropical print swimming trunks and a large blue and white striped towel from the airing cupboard, flinging both over his shoulder. He pads right past me and out of the back door. I watch him as he checks the temperature and the pH and chlorine levels, as he does every evening. He then disappears inside the oak-framed changing room and barbecue area. I want to scream. I walk back through the house to the living room, switch the television on, and watch a dreadful film. I can't concentrate. An hour and a half later, I've had my bath. Lights are out in both of the children's rooms. One of the parenting advantages of living in a period house is that the doors don't fit as neatly as in modern houses, so I can see whether the rooms are in darkness. All is silent. I am about to return to my bedroom when I realise I've forgotten to bring a glass of water upstairs, so with my thin silk dressing gown wrapped around me, I pad downstairs and into the kitchen. I'm surprised that the lights are still on. Adam is a stickler for switching off lights to conserve electricity, and it's nearly always his job to switch everything off and lock up before going to bed. As I'm pouring myself a glass of water from the filter tap, I feel a wisp of cool air despite the warm evening. Frowning, I carry my glass through to the utility room, where it is cooler still. To my surprise, the back door is wide open.
"Adam?" I say, standing on the doorstep, wondering if he's outside. There's no answer. I shut the door. I'm tempted to lock it, amused at the thought of him being locked out of the house for the night, but deciding that is childish, I leave it unlocked and return upstairs. I wonder if he's having a secret tryst with Marianne at the bottom of the garden, and then dismiss the thought. I can't see Marianne, with her delicate kitten heels and coiffured hair, coming around for a quick bonk in the bushes.